On January 18th, the Baseball Hall of Fame announced the election of three players to the National Pastime's most exclusive and prestigious club. So over the next three episodes, you'll hear a longtime broadcaster give his recollection on one of the soon-to-be inductees. For this show, our discussion is with Texas Rangers play-by-play man Eric Nadel and his fond memories of Ivan Rodriguez, who posted more than 2,800 hits and a lifetime batting average of .296, but is most remembered as being one of the greatest defensive catchers ever. On merit, Rodriguez is a surefire first-ballot Hall of Famer, but Pudge does not go into Cooperstown without a hint of skepticism. The performance-enhancing drug allegations made by Jose Canseco in his 2005 book raised questions as to the legitimacy of his accomplishments, even though nothing has officially been proven since then. I asked the voice of the Rangers if he was surprised that Pudge got just above the 75% barrier on the first ballot, or if he thinks the recent election of others who had PED questions and the election of Bud Selig, who was the commissioner during the steroid era, showed that the electorate has scaled back their stance on this issue.
You know, before the voting started, I had no idea. It took Piazza 3 years to get in. I had a feeling maybe it would take Pudge 2 or 3 years to get in. Although, you know, on the basis of the numbers, as you said, he was an automatic slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer. I just didn't know what to expect. Then as the polling numbers started coming in, if you will, and given that I no longer believe any polling numbers of any kind, it at least indicated that he had a chance. So, you know, I can't say I was surprised that the vote went the way it did. I don't think anything would have surprised me.
So if we look back to his first game back in June of 1991 at the age of 19 in Chicago, he really hit the ground running. I mean, he threw out two batters and got a key ninth inning single to immediately establish himself as a big leaguer.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, his confidence was through the roof, too. When he got there that day, you may know the story. He was supposed to get married that day in between games of a doubleheader in Tulsa, double A, 19 years old. When they told him he was coming up, they told him he could wait a day so he could have the wedding between games of the doubleheader. And he said, no, I want to get there as soon as I can and play. So he and his fiance went to the Justice of the Peace in Tulsa and got married, flew to Chicago. And when he walked into the clubhouse late that afternoon, I asked him if he wouldn't mind doing a pregame interview. I had met him in spring training that year. And he said he would do it. And I said, would you like a translator? And he said, no, I'll do it in English. And we went out to the dugout. And one of the questions in the interview was, have they told you that you're only here for 2 weeks? Because one of our catchers, Gino Petralli, had gotten hurt. He wasn't supposed to be an extended absence. And Pudge said, yes, they told me that, but I tell you this, I am never going back. And then what he did in the game, throwing out two base dealers at second on plays that were not even close, handling Kevin Brown, who was the hardest pitcher on the Rangers staff to catch. His sinker went everywhere. And, you know, showing that he could handle himself at the plate as well, you know, by the time that game was over, my attitude about Pudge changed. Originally, I thought, oh, this cocky kid, he doesn't know how baseball works. And by the end of the game, I thought, maybe I'm the guy who doesn't know how baseball works.
That kind of confidence, have you ever seen that kind of confidence in a player, especially a player who's still a teenager?
Not like that. I don't think so. You know, players obviously have confidence or they wouldn't get to that level. But I don't think I've ever seen a teenager, you know, be that sure of his ability to play at the major league level. And, you know, we'd seen him in spring training. And the one thing we noticed in spring training is that, you know, his throws got to second base much faster than anybody else's. You could see it from the press box. It's the only time I ever remember seeing a catcher throw and saying that's different. That's something supernatural. That was the case with Pudge.
Now the 1-1 delivery. There goes Griffey. The pitch swung on a miss. The throw, and they got it. Even though the throw was high, Rodriguez, with that cannon, shoots down Ken Griffey.
And that throwing arm is mostly responsible for making him one of the two greatest defensive catchers of all time. I mean, you can make an argument between him and Johnny Bench about who is the greatest, and there's a strong case for both of them. I mean, I think Ivan Rodriguez threw out 46% of runners that tried to steal against him, which is a major league record. I can't think of any other two other than Yvonne and Johnny Bench as one of the two greatest defensive catchers ever.
Now, let me tell you, the 46% does not even begin to tell the story. Mm-hmm. Hardly anyone ran on Pudge.
Yeah.
Most of the years that he played for the Rangers, he didn't even appear in the official statistics for throwing out runners because he didn't have enough attempts. Even though he caught 150 games, not enough runners tried. The only runners who ever tried against Pudge were the very best base stealers of all. And then some of them, like Ricky Henderson, just stopped trying. And we didn't have pitchers who were particularly good at holding runners on base. Runners stole like crazy, you know, on the days that Pudge wasn't catching.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I saw Bobby Valentine, Pudge's first manager, I was at a New York Mets fan convention this past weekend, and he briefly spoke on how pleased he was to see Pudge make the Hall of Fame. What do you recall as to maybe what Bobby V's first impression and initial expectations of his young catcher were?
Well, you know, the expectations defensively were pretty obvious. But what was amazing to me was I was standing there behind the batting cage one day with Pudge shortly after he'd come to the big leagues. Pudge was hitting. I was standing there with Bobby. And Bobby said, look at this guy's swing. Look at the leverage he gets with his legs. He's going to be a 20 home run a year guy. And we're all thinking, well, you're nuts. You know, he had never even reached 10 in the minor leagues. And Bobby said, you know, when he fills out a little bit and he figures out pitching a little bit better, he's going to be a 20 home run a year guy. And he was absolutely right. So Bobby saw something in Pudge offensively that other people didn't see.
Yeah, expanding on that, how did his ability at the plate evolve in the early years to eventually become a key part of the lineup? I mean, was there a particular season that was kind of a turning point for him at the plate?
I don't recall. I imagine you could probably look at the numbers and figure it out. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, I can't say that that's something that I can remember, a specific moment or a specific turning point. But I do know when they put him in the number two spot in the batting order, he really flourished. You know, he liked hitting. He liked hitting early, and he didn't take a whole lot of pitches. So in the minds of some managers back then, he wasn't the ideal number two hitter. But Johnny Oates saw the value of having Pudge in that two spot, largely because of how well he hit the ball to right field. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Pudge had a pretty good feel for our running game as well. And he did know when to take a pitch, you know, if the guy on in front of him was going to run, which in some cases in 96 was usually Darrell Hamilton who could steal bases. And then 98 and 99, it was Tommy Goodwin who stole a lot of bases.
When I think of a signature moment or set of moments, the first thing that comes to my mind is that division series he had in 2003. Now, this is with the Florida Marlins, but in 2003 against the San Francisco Giants, in which he really took over that series with his bat and with his defense. But as far as a signature season is concerned, that had to be 1999 with the Rangers, the year he won the American League's Most Valuable Player Award and was the first catcher to have more than 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, and 100 runs scored in a single season. You saw all of that. What made him so important to the Rangers team, especially that year?
Well, he did everything. If I'm not mistaken, he also stole 25 bases. Mm-hmm. Which is absurd for a catcher, you know, to have that combination of offensive ability. You know, he had a game in Seattle where he had 9 RBIs in his first 3 times up. And we're figuring that, you know, the all-time record's going down tonight, but it didn't. He stopped at 9. But when he was in a stretch like that, he was streaky. And when he was in a stretch like he was for most of that year, he hit almost everything hard. And it's difficult to comprehend how he did it because he swung at almost everything. You know, you wondered what he might have batted had he been a little more selective at the plate. You know, and one of the keys to his effectiveness, obviously, was his aggressiveness up there. But if he had just laid off some of the pitches that he couldn't hit hard, you know, he always seemed to hit them, but, you know, he would pop up if he swung at a pitch at his shoulders, you know, or he'd ground out if he swung at a pitch at his ankles. Sometimes he got hits off those pitches. But if he just made it a little easier on himself, you know, what his batting average, what sort of offensive damage he might have done.
Breaking ball belted, and there's the new Texas record, a grand slam home run. It is 13-0 Texas, and Pudge Rodriguez now has 9 RBIs tonight. My, oh my, what a night for Pudge Rodriguez. 9 RBIs, a new Texas record.
You know, he hit well enough in the minors using that approach that he never really felt the need to change it. You know, he was also one of these C-ball, hit-ball guys. He didn't care who was pitching for the other team. He didn't care what the scouting report was on that pitcher. He didn't guess hit. He didn't spend a lot of time wondering how this guy was going to pitch to him. He went up there, he looked for the ball, he wailed at it, and he hit it.
You know, naturally, the catcher takes on a leadership role on the field. That's just kind of a given. What did you know to be his leadership in the clubhouse and with his Ranger teammates?
Well, his leadership was a totally upbeat guy. You know, he always had a smile on his face, kind of the same sort of thing that the fans saw. And one of the reasons he's, you know, by far the most popular player in Rangers history, you know, with the possible exception of Nolan Ryan, who I consider in a different category, is the smile and the positive energy that you could see all the time. Well, he brought that to the clubhouse every day. You know, he really had a what me worry kind of air about him, and that makes people loose. You know, you never saw Pudge with a frown on his face. You never saw him worrying about anything. Didn't matter if Randy Johnson was pitching for the other team or some other guy who seemed unhittable. You know, Pudge was smiling, he was confident, and he was looking forward to going out and play that day, and that was really infectious.
So, you know, one final question for you, Eric. I guess two more. As far as the next Ranger to make the Hall of Fame, the first person that comes to my mind is Adrian Beltre. I don't know if he'll go in as he would go in as a Texas Ranger, but certainly he qualifies as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he will be a Hall of Famer for sure. He will go in as a Ranger. At some point this season, he will have played more games for the Rangers than he played as a Dodger. Okay. He's already said that he would like to go in as a Ranger if he gets selected. It's no longer the player's choice, but the player is asked for his preference. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Hall of Fame will put a T on Adrian's cap. I'm hoping he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer too. You know, he's going to reach 3,000 hits this year. And to me, you know, when we've had Fergie Jenkins here, we've had Gaylord Perry here for limited periods of time, Nolan for 5 years, Pudge, and, you know, Adrian came here in 2011. Who knows how long he's going to play? His current contract is for this year and next year. And, you know, then we'll see. But, you know, he'll certainly be selected, and he'll certainly be selected as a Ranger.
And you, from a broadcasting perspective, certainly know about making the Hall of Fame. You were recognized by the Hall of Fame with the Ford C. Frick Award for your time with the Rangers, primarily in 2014. So I have to imagine getting to see the first homegrown player in a franchise you've been associated with for so long, a player you saw throughout the prime of his career, receive the honor that was bestowed upon you, had to be a particular thrill for you personally.
It really was. You know, I was on pins and needles the day of the announcement, you know, knowing it could be close. And, you know, I really felt for Pudge, he had to wait till late in the day. You know, with the Frick Award, they call you first thing in the morning, you know, by 8:30, whether you won or not. With Pudge, he had to wait until 5 o'clock or just before that. But, yeah, everybody around here is really excited for Pudge. You know, and partially because we like him so much as a guy. He's such a good guy. And, you know, nobody really wanted to see him have to wait another year or two and go through that agony. There'll be a lot of celebration around here this year, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Well, Eric, it's so great that you were able to provide some insight on Pudge's career. All the best next season with the Rangers, and thanks so much for joining the show.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this latest episode of Profiles in Sports with Eric Nadel. If you'd like to hear all episodes of this program, which include talks with Mario Andretti, Ken Burns, and Jack Hamm, among others, be sure to subscribe to the Profiles in Sports podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and elsewhere. Also, please check out our website, profilesinsports.com, as well as our Facebook page. And lastly, you can follow me on Twitter, @BrianWright86.